This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
We often talk about the importance of the parent-child relationship, but what about the sibling relationship? Do we underestimate the role siblings play in our lives, from shaping who we are to being one of the longest relationships many of us will ever have? Good morning, Kirsten Diprose here with you on The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, coming to you from the studio in Ballarat today. Siblings are often the ones who know us best, and for many of us, they're the only ones who know what it's like to have the same parents and grow up in the same household. Now, that's the good side. There's also sibling rivalry, jealousy, which can even extend into adulthood, and sadly, there can be estrangement too. In this hour, we're looking at how important sibling relationships are and all the different forms that they take. So do we underestimate the importance of our siblings in our lives? How has your sibling shaped you?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Plenty of calls, I'm sure. There are a lot of us with siblings. I have an older brother, and I'm sure he's shaped me. He doesn't use this word, well, we don't use this word, I should say, as a society so much anymore, but he is technically a genius. He could actually do long division at the age of 3, and he'd absolutely hate that I've called him a genius on air, but he's not going to hear it because he lives in England and works in artificial intelligence in Google. But by default, him being a genius made me the less intelligent one. So I always think it must have come as a shock to my parents when I arrived as decidedly average in all my developmental milestones. And my personality traits and areas of interest are also very different to his. But there is such joy in that too. So I want to hear about your sibling relationship, how it's shaped you. Has your self-identity been shaped in comparison to your sibling? Well, joining us now is a very special pair of twins. You'll know one of them, Dave O'Neill, who you've been hearing on Breakfast for the last couple of weeks on ABC Radio Melbourne. He's a comedian as well. And he also has a remarkable, less famous, but very successful brother who founded an organisation that works with humanitarian agencies. So firstly, welcome to the program, Dave O'Neill.
Yeah, well, I didn't know my brother founded an organisation, so I'm learning stuff right now.
Well, maybe I got that wrong.
No, he did. He did. Yeah, he worked for the Red Cross for a long time. That's right. And then he's gone out on his own, I believe.
Yeah. Well, let's ask Glenn. Yeah, Glenn O'Neill is your brother, and he's here joining us from Switzerland. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Switzerland. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, no, I did. I mean, I founded a consultancy that helps organizations, mainly humanitarian organizations like the Red Cross and the UN. That's correct, yeah. But Dave, I think he knew that.
That's super exciting. And Glenn, thank you for joining us from Geneva, because what time is it over there?
It's about 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah. I'd like to say I'm an early riser, not that early usually, but yeah, I'm happy to be on, you know, the show.
Geez, you're a good brother, isn't he, Dave, for joining you?
Yes, he is. He's appeared on various radio programs with me because he's been overseas for a long time and people don't believe that I've got a twin brother, so I've got to make him turn up sometimes for people to see or hear, yeah.
Are you identical twins?
Yes. Except I'm bigger than him. Yeah. Up until uni, definitely we're mistaken for each other constantly. Yeah.
So tell us about growing up. Dave, we'll start with you. What was Glenn like, and what was the sibling relationship like?
Oh, we were like best friends. We had two older brothers, Mark and Trevor, who were still going, and we stuck to ourselves in a lot of ways, didn't we, Glenn? And Mark and Trevor were a team as well. But Trevor was always the leader, being the oldest child. But me and Glenn shared a bedroom, you know, classrooms. We went to different unis, but then we moved into a shared house together. We were in a band together. We both worked for the Red Cross in the 80s. So, yeah, we were pretty close. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. And Glenn, from your perspective, when you look at Dave's career, are you, you know, super proud of him. I mean, you do such different things.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, when we played in the band, we were spectacularly unsuccessful. But it was great that Dave then went on to make, you know, a career in that way. And when the band split up, I sort of left the country. The two weren't really related, but, you know, went overseas to work for the Red Cross. So, no, we're all, you know, myself and my brothers are very proud of what Dave does. Yeah, we've taken different directions, maybe in that respect.
And Dave, I mean, you know, you make us all laugh, but your brother's there saving the world.
Yeah, I know. That's what I always say. He's also some sort of doctor, and he works for Red Cross. Anyway, whatever, you know, like, and they did an article on him in the Good Weekend magazine, and they had a photo of him with Somali, warlords or something, and they used me as the punchline. They said I'd never face an audience that had pointed machine guns at me. That's what they said about me.
Text message from Liz in Ballarat, who says, have you just told us there are two Dave O'Neills? The world gets better by the minute.
Oh, that's nice. But it's actually, you know, my mum used to say Mark, who's the middle child, and he still lives at home. He was the really funny one, apparently. So there we go. It's Mark.
I think when I was on one of Dave's show recently, someone did, you know, social media can be rather cruel. Someone did say, Glenn, I just don't find you funny. But you know, I had to respond and say, well, actually, I'm not the funny one, you know. So I think growing up, yeah, with twins, it's like one is more introvert and one is more extrovert. Dave was definitely the extrovert. So Dave would often speak on our behalf in a way, you know, in terms of sibling rivalry between us, there was no real rivalry. Most of it was our older brothers, so it was more like us against them sometimes.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic. And it's interesting how it all plays out depending on how many you've got in your family and the age gaps you might have. Glenn, do you find then, are you the one that gets compared to Dave? I suppose only in an Australian context, perhaps, but because I know some siblings, you get compared. I have an older brother, and therefore I was always Joel's sister. You know, when I finally rocked up to the high school that he was at, I was always, you know, Joel's sister, whereas he was really Kirsten's brother. So, yeah, are you Dave's brother?
I think, yeah, in a way, I think like when we were growing up, yeah, we were perhaps our older brother, particularly our older brother Trev, was very, you know, skilled in sports and academically. And Dave and myself were both very underachievers, I would say, at high school. I have a PhD. I'm not a real doctor, as mums say. I have a PhD. But, you know, so despite our poor school performance, we were compared to our older brothers in a way. More so than being compared to each other, because people would just refer to us as the twins. Like,
yeah,
a singular
like
item, actually. Unit. Like, everyone say just the twins, you know.
Is there any uncanny twin stuff that happens? You always hear about it. Like, you're on opposite sides of the worlds. Can you sense when someone's in trouble?
No.
Not really.
He's been in some hairy situations, too, because he works in, you know, developing countries. But the only thing that ever happened was I had to pick up Glenn from the airport, and my neighbour, this was years ago, gave me a book, a very obscure book called The Good Soldier Sviek to read, which is a Czechoslovakian comedy novel, and Glenn was reading it on the plane.
That's true. Yeah, that can often happen. Like Dave will say to me, "Oh, look, have you heard that latest CD? Or not CD anymore, but yeah, have you heard that latest song?" Say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, I've just been listening to it." So that similar taste. But yeah, I mean, Dave said, "Yeah, I've been in hairy situations in Somalia or in Bosnia," but at the same time, he did once fall off a BMX bike and broke your leg. No, David.
I mean, yeah, I did. Absolutely.
I'm not talking about when you're 15. So.
Yeah, I've done gigs in Moree, Cairns. I've had some hairy situations, you know. Rockingham, near Perth, Adelaide, you know. Anyway, you know.
But Glenn, you can't sense when if Dave's had a bad show.
No, the shows I've been to haven't been bad, but as I'm there, often Dave makes me part of the show, you know, points me out, you know, which...
Oh, Dave,
I'm... You know, all for the, you know, I'm all for contributing to his success.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you haven't had a bad show in a long, long time, if ever. I've certainly never seen one, Dave.
There's been a few.
Look,
no, at my level, you get about one or two a year, I can tell you right now.
Really?
They do happen. Yeah, they do. Oh, that's just your... Yeah, they do happen, don't worry. Absolutely.
Now, because you're both successful, do you feel like it's your job to just keep each other level? Like, I feel like it's my job with a genius brother to just take him back down to the right level sometimes, like just to let him know what's going on in the common land in which I live. So I like to just and take him down a peg in a loving way. Do you do that for each other?
Well, firstly, let's just say your brother sounds like a real genius, whereas we're not. We're
But you're pretty successful.
Well, you know, I mean, does he really work for Google? Is he just telling you and your mum and dad that? You know what I mean?
Like, that's true.
You'd probably go over there and see him working in Mark and Spencer. You know what I mean?
He won't even come on to talk on this show because he can't, like, because he's working on top secret things. I reckon you're right. He's in Mark and Spencer.
Yeah, that's an excuse, I reckon. Glenn, the only thing Glenn ever does is, you don't speak English that much anymore, do you, Glenn? You speak French. What do you speak every day, Glenn?
French and English, but a little bit of Italian too,
Well, that's pretty good. How many languages do you have, Dave?
None. We have to remind him that he grew up in a suburb next to Ringwood in Melbourne, you know, and went to the high school.
That's true.
I have to remind you.
Yes, I like that. I remind my brother where he grew up as well. He's a boy from Western Sydney. Never forget it, is what I say. Look, we have to wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us on this program. And Dave, especially after you just finished doing a stellar job on Breakfast, a lot of love on the text line for you. And for you too, Glenn. Thank you so much for joining us and getting up so early.
Great.
No worries.
Happy to be on. Yeah.
Loving the sibling chat. That's fascinating. I found this stuff fascinating. So I'm going to keep listening.
Oh, please do. Thank you so much, both. Dave O'Neill and Glenn O'Neill, twins. You can catch Dave, of course, at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. He's got shows on, I think, pretty much every day till the end of the run. And fascinating to hear what Glenn's up to.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Steve has texted in to say, I've had the privilege of both of these brothers playing in their amazing band at my 21st and even having an opportunity to sing along with them, and the dynamic between them was always warm and friendly. I know deep down they are both born to shop. I don't know if that's... I'm not sure what that means. But, there you go. A couple of people remembering the good old days there for you, Dave and Glenn, if you're still listening. Let's take a different turn now, because there are so many questions about what a sibling relationship means for who we are today. And Tamara Kavnett is with us, clinical psychologist and past president of the Australian Psychological Society. Tell me about the importance of a sibling relationship. What do we learn from them, particularly when we're growing up?
Yeah, so your siblings can actually help you shape your identity. You get them as a role model. You definitely get social skills. So they really have that chance to have an influence on you, who you become, who you develop into, and how you see yourself.
What are some of the things we learn early on in those early years? We often hear about conflict resolution as being perhaps something we learn with a sibling.
Yeah, so definitely it's a competitive relationship, and that's how you can form some of your identity. You either do that by achieving off your sibling, or you'll do it by competing with them on the same task and sometimes even sharing an activity. So it is one where you will actually learn, you know, what you like, what you don't like, what you're good at, and maybe even what you're better than your sibling on.
Is that a good thing, to have that competition?
I think it can be good. It can also be bad. So it just depends how you experience it. If it's really causing a lot of distress because you aren't as good at something or you can't do it with as much ease, it can help you find an activity that you can actually strive really well in and maybe even differentiate you from a sibling. On the other hand, it can be that, you know, moment where you feel like you're not achieving as much as someone else and a little bit less than. And certainly fights, arguments, and all the conflict, you learn learn those skills, you know, from your siblings and within those relationships.
Does any of that dynamic that you had with a sibling or siblings play out later when you're older, either in the relationship you have as adults or in other relationships you have in life?
You definitely learn all of your negotiation skills, how to resolve a conflict, how to apologise, you know, how to work with someone else when something happens. So that will go from your young age into adulthood. You'll take that into friendships, romantic relationships, even work and things like that. And it does help you develop your career and other areas that you might work in. So it definitely does come from that relationship where you learn that, ideally in a safe space with your sibling.
What about if you don't have any siblings? If you're an only child, do you develop the same sort of conflict and negotiation skills?
So we do know that sometimes social skills or conflict resolution skills can occur a little bit later in an only child. But again, you'll tend to learn them through your other relationships. So if you don't learn it with a sibling, you might learn it with a cousin or a close family friend. And we know that only children will develop very strong bonds with people external, potentially because they don't have it in a sibling that's easy and close by, but they will develop it in other relationships. So it's not necessarily that you won't learn how to do that.
Yeah, because I think it's something that parents of only children worry about is like, oh, are they going to be socially okay if they don't have a sibling? And, you know, our families are getting smaller.
I think I can understand why they get concerned about it, but we do absolutely learn in so many different ways, and they will always have friends, they'll have conflict and negotiate within those. They'll, you know, often have a best friend or a close person, and that bond may well be closer because children with siblings might have that bond with their sibling and they're not required in other relationships. So don't think you're behind, just a bit different.
How about in terms of shaping your own identity? So my brother is incredibly intelligent, and that's not to say that I'm, you know, stupid, but I'm not a genius, particularly to the same level as him. But, you know, when you've got a family, a smart one, a cool one, an athletic one, can that really shape your self-identity?
It certainly can. So we know that parents and all people do have a tendency to categorise. So, you know, if you were thinking twins, one will be this type and the other will be that way. And we tend to use labels to categorise that. And that can help in some ways where you'll develop an identity around that as an athlete or in your academics. So it can be a good thing. On the other hand, you can feel a bit pigeonholed and like you're not seen, or the other areas that you might have been good at are not supported as well because you've been a bit pigeonholed. So it works both ways.
Can you break out of that? You know, I think some of us really don't like perhaps the identity that we might have had as a child and want something new.
You absolutely can. And people are flexible. So if you do push them, make changes to your identity, really communicate that and put that across, you will get family members and friends that can update and stop seeing you in such a singular way. So, you know, I do encourage people to explore who they are, their identity, and allow that to shift and change across time. What was important to us when we're in our teens often isn't in your 30s and 40s.
Phoebe has texted in from Geelong to ask, is it normal for the youngest child to feel like an only child?
You know, it's really interesting. It does depend on age gaps. So we know that siblings that are very close in age gap, they may not tend to feel that, whereas those with a larger age gap might feel a little bit like they're on their own, navigating things a little bit later when parents have already been there.
Yeah, I remember missing my brother, who's only 3 years older than me, but when he left home and I was still at school, I really missed him. And I was also sad that I know he didn't really miss me because he was off living a great life, you know, flatmating with mates, and I was just home alone with the parents who, you know, at the time I thought were just boring and out of touch. So, it just depends on that age gap. And is there a kind of different way that the relationship plays out, say if you do have a sibling who is a lot older than you?
It does, like it can change the relationship. So there is a closeness and a bonding that you get when you share friends and interests, and you have a lot more contact with a same or close age sibling. So you get that You get a lot more of your competitiveness as well. So that, you know, in the fact that you might be working on the same achievements or using the same resources when it's smaller, but with larger ones, you can get that mentor relationship, that really parent-like type of relationship where they might babysit or help out or give you advice. So positives and negatives to everything.
Can you get that parent relationship perhaps if you're in a single parent family?
You definitely can. So you can get from your siblings some of the relationship dynamics and information and advice and shaping and modelling that you might have gotten from a second parent. So, you know, there's all sorts of ways for us to grow and develop and get that identity, and it comes, you know, in all different forms, and we'll seek it out if we don't have it.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I used to call my brother Dad Bro, because my mum was a single mum for a while, and he sort of took on a bit of that semi-parent role, even though he was only just under 3 years older than me, so not a lot older, but I think because of that household that we're in, that's what happened.
And it wouldn't necessarily have been bad. You know, it will depend on your response to it and how he handled it, but it may have created just another bond and a closeness from that as well.
Yeah, I think it has. In the long term, it's been a good thing. In the teenage years, I didn't like it. It was like another parent I'd had to deal with, you know, and I'd be like, don't tell me what to do. Let's go to Anna Brand now, who, in fact, is Fanny Lumsden's sister, award-winning singer-songwriter Fanny Lumsden. And, of course, Anna is many things, and probably it's not very nice to be introduced by someone else's identity, is it, Anna? But welcome to the program.
Hi, Catherine. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks. And Anna is also a friend of mine and a very successful neonatal nurse. But what is it like being the sister of someone famous?
So I think it's one of those funny things when you're a family member, you don't see them as a famous person, but you sort of see the social media and the performances and all those kinds of things in the crowds, and you sort of have this confusing sort of disconnect from that because they are your sibling, but you just have this overriding joy and you're so proud of them because you love them so much, being your sibling. But it is a funny thing, you know, knowing that they are famous on one hand, but they're just your sister on the other. You know, they were sitting down to the table with you at dinner. You know, you have the same sibling rivalries or things going on, but you know, that's just who they are to you.
Tamara Cavanagh is still with us. She's a clinical psychologist. But Anna, I wanted to ask about the family dynamics, I suppose, of having someone who is sort of on the centre stage and in a career like Fanny, you know, she's got she's travelling around all the time. Does that put different pressure on the family?
Well, on the extended family, what that means is that we all have to come together to support them in doing what they are doing. So it's that thing where, you know, if they're touring here in Australia, you know, their kids can go with them. But when they go overseas, they might not be able to take their kids with them, you know, out of school all the time. And so things like, you know, being able to come together and help with the kids or support the shows, things like that is really important. And so, you know, I'm at the moment, it's the school holidays for us. And so I've been up and staying with family this week with my parents to help look after my sister's sons while Fanny is overseas, so that her little boys can have as much consistency and have a nurturing environment so she can continue to do what she's doing, you know, by having the cousins together, you know, bringing that nurturing and caring environment to them to, you know, give the kids consistency. So that's how sort of we come together.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to do that, though.
No, I don't. But it's my personality is, you know, I guess I'm, without sort of thinking about this way, I guess I am naturally caring and nurturing. You know, I have taken a career as a neonatal intensive care nurse. I have a knitwear business, the Woolly brand for infants and children. So I have sort of taken that angle. But it is important to me that my sister's children can be loved and cared for in the way that I know that she would want to. And yeah. I see it as a way that I can support her, because we live on the, you know, the other side of the state to them. You know, they're in the Upper Murray, we're in the Western Districts. And so I can't sort of go to shows and help with them regularly. But, you know, there are things, there are times where when they do go overseas and the holidays align, I can, you know, step up and help. And that makes me happy, and I know that it'll make them happy knowing that their kids are, you know, are getting that love from us. You know, my sister's son was a little bit upset the other day, and he was like, he said to me, can you be my auntie mum this week while mum's away? And, you know, what better privilege is there than to help that happen?
Yeah. This message from Joe on the text line: my brother was a musical prodigy. He was the youngest after three girls and then a significant age gap. We enjoyed the reflected glory of his success. Sadly, we girls missed out on the musical genes. What was it like growing up? You know, was Fanny off performing and being a, you know, musical amazing person, and you guys, you know, had to fit around that? Or what was that like?
Well, actually, we come from quite a musical family. Both my mum's side of the family and my dad's side of the family have lots of musicians from all walks of, you know, musical life, from opera singers to, you know, actors to the stage, you know, what have we got, concert performers. So there's a lot of music in the family. So we all grew up all performing, all going to, you know, the local Stedfords and you know, practicing. It was music scholarships that got us all through boarding school, all those kinds of things. So for us, music was something that brings us together. And so, she, you know, for her to be now doing that, it's just an extension of, I guess, you know, a childhood that we were all part of.
Oh, I think that's lovely. And then, you know, you get to sort of keep dipping into that throughout her career. Anna Brand, thank you so much for joining us on The Conversation Hour.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Anna Brand there, Fanny Lumsden's sister, among many other things, business owner, nurse, mother, and auntie mum or mum aunt just for the weekend or this week. You're listening to The Conversation Hour. My name is Kirsten Diprose, and Tamara Cavanagh is still with us, clinical psychologist. Tamara, there are some really interesting things there. What's your take? Like, what's it like to have a famous sibling?
So they clearly have a beautiful relationship and have really worked to support each other. And I think when you can come at it from that perspective, it works really well. But certainly there's challenges. So for a lot of them, it can be quite overwhelming being overshadowed in such a public way by someone else's personality and identity out there in fame. So it's important that you actually carve out your own sense of who you are, your own career path, and something that differentiates you so that you don't feel as much like you're competing. And certainly, you know, being out there in the public media just by being a sibling can be a real challenge. So having good support and managing that really well can be important. But I think there is proof that you can have a great relationship despite all that.
Yeah. This on the text line, just jumped down. I think one of the greatest benefits of having siblings is you learn to fight, forgive and forget. Plus, you learn to share and compromise as you are not the most important person. I have three sisters and then two much younger brothers. That's from Rosalind in Dandenong. What's it like when you've got a big family? You know, today a lot of our families are only one, two, or maybe three kids is considered a lot. But when you're one of seven, how does that shape you?
I actually think it's a really good thing. The more siblings that you have, the more people that you've got a chance to develop your identity with, negotiate, have really strong bonds and communication with, I think that can be really, really good. I do think that there is that chance that you feel a little bit like you're lost in the sea of people and a little bit competitive over attention and resources from parents. So it's got positive points, and then it's got the fact that there might be challenges in getting and carving out who you are and getting those time and resources with each other and with your parents and the other people that you want some attention from.
Tamara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tamara Cavanagh, their clinical psychologist and past president of the Australian Psychological Society. Kirsten Diprose here with you on The Conversation Hour. Do we underestimate the importance of our siblings in our lives? Has your sibling shaped you in any way? On the text line, my older sister was a famous poet. My younger sister and I adored her and were so proud of her. We never felt sibling jealousy. We would sit in the audience full of pride. She was so fabulous and is deeply missed. Wow. It's all, she said, I'm a veterinarian, so no competition at all, just love. Elizabeth Shaw is the CEO of Relationships Australia. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Great conversation so far.
Thank you. It's interesting to hear those beautiful messages from people who have such pride and love and admiration for their siblings well into adulthood. How can we make sure that that's the relationship that we have and that jealousy or competition doesn't come into it?
Oh, look, it's really challenging, particularly when something has gone awry in childhood for a whole lot of reasons, and sometimes something that was foisted upon the children, not even something of their own making like you might expect with personality clashes. You know, sometimes you just have more affinity with one or other sibling, or you have more in common, or there's various things that kind of either throw you together or make you, you know, less sort of simpatico with each other. But you can have events from outside that shape you. And so once those dynamics take hold in childhood, then there is the normal expectation you'll move out of home, and then it's kind of, oh, just move on, find friends. You'll only see them two or three times a year. It doesn't matter. People don't always put the work into fixing that stuff up. They start to think, I shouldn't let this bother me. And so some of those dynamics amazingly really shape people and come up again and again and again at other significant life events. And what I see is some of those things repeat, say, at weddings. It's like, oh, you're always like that, you know. Or it might be at funerals, or it might be around family decisions like later in life with elderly parents. And you find that early childhood stuff and the dynamics that have just got baked in do keep repeating themselves. And yet there is also a question, why stop and do work on that? You know, what does it matter? Should I just not care and move on? And it's a missed opportunity to not do that work.
Yeah, and this text message, sibling relationships can also be totally dominant and destructive as well. Some of us take years to be who we are after finally leaving home. And that's the point that you were making, really, that we need to almost re-establish sometimes our sibling relationships as adults, because we're not in the pecking order, or we don't have... You know, sometimes, you know, when you're the younger one, it's almost like a disadvantage of being the younger one and not being as able or as capable in a scenario. But that doesn't, you know, that's not there when you're an adult.
Well, look, that's true, although it is amazing when you get together, you can slot into roles. And I think it depends if you've developed more security too, that as a child you can feel really lesser than for being, you know, the youngest. But as you get older, you can laugh and take advantage and find it quite a benevolent thing. Oh, you know, there goes my older sister looking after me quite unnecessarily. You know, that can also be a soft, benign, you know, rather cute kind of thing too. But that often depends on the security you've developed in yourself, whether you need to continue to see these things as a threat or not. And, you know, whether you understand family dynamics from a softer, wiser place. But of course, some family dynamics are quite brutal too, and there can be continued acting out. I think the other thing is that, like, you know, when you go to a school reunion and you suddenly find someone who you never got on with at school, but suddenly your lives have thrown you together, siblings can rediscover themselves. You know, they can say, well, now we're in our 40s. You know, amazingly, I now have a lot more in common with my elder brother, who I barely spoke to, and my very close sister. You know, we have, you know, our lives have taken us in a different direction. And I think being open to those discoveries and having that curiosity, you know, I wonder what I've taken for granted or actually tuned out, because I think, oh, that's just my brother. I know him so well, I don't even need to give him consideration. You know, maybe there is more to tune into, and again, more to discover.
What about the role of parents in sibling dynamics, either when they're younger or even as adults, in ensuring they have a good relationship? You know, I've got two boys and I say to them all the time, you know, I want you two to be, you know, good friends. And I know I can't force it, but I want them to always have each other throughout life, long after I'm not here.
Well, look, I think that's a gift. That is a real gift. And unfortunately, it doesn't always happen. I think if parents are in themselves very secure, or if the couple relationship is very, very fraught, conflictual, contentious, where there's violence, all of that can really skew the childhood experience. If you've got parents that are more divide and conquer, or in fact want separate relationships with kids and think if the kids have relationships with each other, that's a threat, then a sibling sort of subsystem is not encouraged. So I think what you're doing, which is a gift that you give your children to, you know, encourage a bit of benign collusion between them, you know, them having yes. secrets. Them having a special relationship, them leaving their parents out, you know, in a positive way.
Yes.
Having their own closeness is a gift, but unfortunately that's not always how things play out.
Have you got some advice on perhaps mending a broken sibling relationship or a difficult one and trying to get a little bit closer to a sibling?
Look, I think the first thing to do is always to start with a self audit, to start to think, not in a blaming or kick yourself kind of way, but, you know, what did I bring to the conflict that we had? You know, what, from their perspective, and in fact, from my own perspective, what might I have brought to that, rather than we tend to go to what other people have done to us, and that gets our backs up and makes us feel righteous and indignant. So just trying to look at that. Try and think about, well, what has my sibling accused me of over the years, and do I have to hand on heart own a bit of that? To think more broadly about what were the circumstances in which we grew up and what were the other forces at work, whether it was point in time, you know, poverty, living circumstances, other events that shaped us that were out of our control, and have a bit of compassion for that. And I think to be open to the fact that, you know, maybe there's something about your siblings that you don't understand, or a perspective that would be worth hearing. I think getting all of that in mind before you approach gives you the best chance to just be open to hear it. But I think yeah. to lead fundamentally with, look, I want more for us. I think we had a rocky start, or we've got history, but it matters to me that we could have more. Will you do that work with me?
That's such beautiful advice. Say that last bit again for me, Elizabeth. I want more from our relationship. Is that it?
Yeah, but to say, look, we've had a rocky start, or we've got history. We're grown-ups now. There's new possibilities, and I want that for us. You know, I want to see if there's a chance for something more. And will you go on that journey with me? And, you know, I'm open to your perspective, and I want you to be open to mine, and to really think about whether you may even involve a therapist in that. And I know it can feel the least likely to think you'd go to therapy with yeah. a sibling. You always think of a partner or your children, but I've done that work with siblings where there's been some sort of damaging history, and gosh, it can be really beautiful work and set you up for a lot of years ahead where something more could be possible.
Elizabeth Shaw, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Shaw there, CEO of Relationships Australia. A text message: also, when the parent has a favourite that causes big problems. Being one of nine, our mother always said, you have to stick together, and we still do to this very day. And clearing up a text message from earlier about Dave O'Neill and his brother Glenn and their band. I didn't understand the Born to Shop reference, and that was apparently one of their songs. There you go. The O'Neill brothers still have a few fans out there from their early days in Melbourne. Love to hear that. Do you underestimate the importance of our siblings in our lives, and how has your sibling shaped you?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Kirsten Diprose here, joining you from our Ballarat studio. Just a shout out there to some of our non-traditional families. Some of us didn't grow up with our siblings. They might have found them later in life. Or they might have grown up in a different household. Well, Jack Nunn is a founder and director of Science for All, and he's got quite a bit of an interesting family history. Hi, Jack.
Hello. Good morning.
Tell me about how you discovered, I guess, a whole different family, a whole different family altogether.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying this conversation, and I think just as an initial reflection, as you know, I think sibling rivalry is probably the greatest force in the universe, and I certainly sort of have had a bit of a new insight into that. So yeah, I'm Jack Nunn, and I was doing a PhD a few years ago, which I've now finished it, and it was in public health genomics. And really, I was looking at how can we involve everybody in shaping the future of DNA research, so bringing democracy and human rights into research. So I thought, well, I'd better get some personal experience. And so we bought my mum a DNA test because she was trying to find out who her grandfather was. Long story short, she did. But she also unexpectedly discovered that her father wasn't her father. She was actually conceived by a sperm donor, and this was in 1949 in London. This was completely unexpected and opened a lot of questions. So, yeah.
I didn't even know that was possible back in 1949. But I suppose it's genetics. There's been things happening on farms for longer than that, haven't there? So how many siblings does your mother have then?
Well, it's a matter of discussion, but the facts are that a woman called Dr. Mary Barton, who had a medical qualification, ran a clinic in Harley Street. And her husband was an Austrian scientist who left Austria in the 1930s because it was decided by the Nazis that he was Jewish, although he didn't self-identify necessarily with that term. He saw the writing on the wall and left and moved to the UK. And he ended up with his wife running a fertility clinic, and they were helping people start families who were struggling. And of course, you know, back in the day, if a woman wasn't able to conceive, the woman was often blamed, and anyone who knows anything about biology knows, of course, it can just as equally be the man. So they were providing a service, and one day a week it was free, the other days of the week they charged for it, and they did this for many, many years. So they told people that the sperm came from intelligent stock. They had a large sort of bank of donors. We know now that they didn't have quite a large bank of donors, and in fact Bertolt Fiesner himself did a lot of the donating. So it's estimated that there are somewhere between 600 and 1,000 offspring that he fathered.
Wow, your mum could have 600 to 1,000 siblings. That's, you know, incredible. We're not really meant to have that many siblings. What, has she met any of them?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this was all completely unexpected. I mean, finding out your father isn't your biological father is one thing, but to find out that you not only have one or two half siblings, but you have, you know, potentially hundreds, for some people that's quite overwhelming. That's quite upsetting, and certainly for the half siblings that maybe are conceived by the social parents, as you might put it, that's a difficult thing sometimes for people to reconcile too. But yeah, I've actually been lucky enough to meet a lot of them too. We occasionally have sort of family meetups, family get-togethers, and you know, it's really flipped my personal views on the nature nurture debate. I think I used to sort of think, well, you know, we've all got, you know, we share 55% of our DNA with a banana, and you know, we as humans, as a species, something like that, I think. Yeah, and as a species, we are quite inbred, you know, compared to sort of chimps or whatever, so we are already very closely related, sort of statistically speaking. So, but I used to think, well, you know, your DNA codes for this or that, but having met all of these people who weren't brought up together, met in later life, sometimes in their 60s or even their 70s, seeing the mannerisms, the facial expressions, and really the interesting one for me was sense of humor, you know, a similar sense of humor and that sort of thing, really threw open that nature-nurture debate. And of course, a lot of these half-siblings have got kids, so I've met their kids. So my half-cousins or husbands, as we call ourselves, you know, we're all in touch too. So there's all these fascinating discussions, you know, which is sort of redefining wondering, what does the word family mean, you know?
Jack Nunn, you made a great point there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Jack Nunn there, founder and director of Science for All, with that extraordinary story. Dr. Justin Coulson is with us. He's a co-host and parenting expert on Channel 9's Parental Guidance and the founder of happyfamilies.com.au. Welcome to the program, Justin.
Yeah, nice to be with you. Thanks so much.
Isn't that fascinating, the nature-nurture debate? And it's only when you hear stories like that do we really, are we able to kind of get a little bit of evidence, if you like?
Twin studies have been conducted for a number of years around the country now, around the globe, a number of decades, and it's extraordinary, the findings. People who are raised in adopted circumstances, so they're born twins, they're conceived and born as twins, they're separated at birth for any number of strange situations, they end up being raised in different parts of the country by different parents, and yet they grow up to essentially become the same person, the same talents, the same attributes, the same characteristics, the same name of pets, the same, I mean, the stories are just extraordinary when you look at it, and so far beyond coincidence, the genetic input is extraordinary.
So then how do we make sense of things growing up and the influence, say, our siblings have on us? And I really wanted to specifically ask you about birth order. And if you go on social media, there's always like memes about, oh, that's the typical first child or middle child thing to do. Is birth order a way to answer our personality traits?
No, the short answer is no. There's a lot of myths around birth order. There are some really interesting findings in terms of birth order and a handful of small characteristics. But fundamentally, when you meet somebody, you can't look at them and say, oh, they're clearly a firstborn, or they're clearly a middle child, or they're absolutely undeniably a third child, or a single child. Like, you can't. The data just isn't there. You look at your work colleagues, you've got no idea where they come in the family. Yeah. The attributes, the characteristics, there is a little bit of evidence that shows that firstborns do tend to have a little bit more parental investment, and so they may have something of a slightly more elevated academic success, so they might be more inclined towards roles in life where they do get to take a leadership option. Maybe they've done better at school because they had that greater level of investment. And lastborns can sometimes have parents that are just so tired of raising kids that they let them get away with a little bit more, and so therefore they're a little ill-disciplined. But again, basically, when we're looking at statistics, if you get enough people into a sample, you can find relationships that in between your variables that aren't really noticeable in real life. That's a statistical finding, but not a meaningful real life finding. And that's basically where birth order findings generally sit. I'm highly, highly skeptical of anyone who says we've got a birth order finding and we can now tell where you come in the family.
So is it more case by case, really, to think about your own situation and what that might have had, rather than sort of, you know, doing a bit of that Google psychology and gleaning from that why you might be the way you are?
Undeniably. I mean, just think about a couple of factors that can intrude or interfere in what anything that birth order research might find. Let's say you're a male or you're a female, or perhaps you have a child who, as a parent, maybe your firstborn has some kind of an intellectual difficulty or disability, or maybe you lose your first child. So the secondborn child then becomes the firstborn in terms of birth order, from the point of view that they're being raised as a first child, but they're clearly not. Then you've got twins, you've got all sorts of other, there are so many competing factors for what will contribute to intelligence outcomes or school and academic outcomes or relationship outcomes. The variables that can interfere with this are just so vast. And again, that's why this is an unfruitful area, I think, for research.
I wanted to run this text by you. I love my brother, my only sibling, but we can't talk about politics. Our views are so different. Sometimes he says something which causes a real cognitive dissonance in me. It's hard to reconcile the person I really care about with some of his views. It can be really upsetting. We get on very well when we don't talk about politics. I think there'll be a lot of people who can relate to that, Justin. Would you have any advice in that space?
So I'm one of six kids, and I have a couple of siblings who we're the same. We love each other deeply, but we just can't go there politically. We are worlds apart. It's almost like we were born in different households. It doesn't make sense. I mean, we share a lot of genetic material, but our lived experience is vastly different. We have different school experiences, different friends, different experiences in the social organizations that we're a part of as we grow. We listen to different music, consume different media, do different degrees at university, and all of these things shape who we are, where we land on different topics. So people are often surprised when they have their own kids. They say, oh, I can't believe how different each of them is to one another. Yes. I mean, they've come out of the same two people. And I sort of go, have you looked at you and your siblings? Like, I'm one of six, and we are just so vastly different. If we didn't look the same, you would not believe we came from the same family. And I think that's wonderful. That gives diversity and energy to our meetups. It makes it fascinating, so long as we can be tolerant and compassionate and recognize that life and its various forms are just part of... This is what makes life so rich.
Justin Coulson, thank you so much.
Delightful. Thanks.
Dr. Justin Coulson there, co-host and parenting expert on parental guidance on Channel 9. He has a podcast as well. Great point there about recognising that, yes, our siblings are different to us, of course, and our kids are different to each other. So I'm Kirsten Diprose. Thank you for this week.